So I woke up this morning about 7 o'clock. I was a little shocked and pleasantly surprised. The sun had come up this morning. Based on all the news reports, I wasn't expecting that. I turned on my computer. What do you know? Still got electricity. Still got the internet. Plenty of puppy pictures and political memes on my Facebook feed, just like always. I made myself some breakfast. I'd stocked up on bread and milk last night, just in case. Turns out I needn't have bothered. The roads are open and clear. Traffic lights are all working. The grocery stores are all open. Maybe, just maybe, we'll all survive this government shutdown after all. In fact, you know what? Despite the bleak picture being painted by all the media, this government shutdown isn't a fraction of the problem that 2 inches of snow overnight would have been. I wonder why the media and the politicians are all running around with their hair on fire. Is it possible they're just messing with me?
Well, duh.
Tack it up, buddy, gonna shut you down.
Well, they've done it again. Congress has shut down the government. And each side is doing their best to make sure we care enough to punish the other side for it. What if they gave a government shutdown and nobody came? Seriously, some of us have seen this movie before. Let's just say we're not impressed. But the media love it. Government shutdowns may not mean much to the average Joe, but the media can sure sell a lot of mouthwash and irritable bowel medication off of it. This was literally all they could talk about on the Sunday shows this morning. All the Sunday shows but this one, that is. We'll give it a few minutes, of course. We kind of have to. But there was a lot more going on this week, and we'll talk about it. Republicans are chanting, "Release the memo!" But apparently so are the Russians. Meanwhile, Democrats are still pushing the collusion narrative, but they've moved on to version 3.0. First it was the dossier, but that's been widely discredited. Then it was Papadopoulos, but the timeline was all wrong. Now the Dems are going for the gold, the perfect Democratic wet dream. The NRA did it. This one should be interesting. There was a State of the State address here in Delaware last Thursday, and Congress reauthorized Section 702. Aziz Ansari had a bad date, and Facebook is messing with us again. But of course, the real news was the latest in the Stormy Daniels affair. No one can say we don't know how to cut through all the clutter and find the real news. Thanks for joining us. This is Radio Free America on Blog Talk Radio with your hosts, Jess McVeigh the Elder and Will McVeigh the Younger. Let's talk some politics. All right. Welcome, listeners, to another edition of Radio Free America on Blog Talk Radio. That's one of my favorite songs. Well, I don't know if... I don't think
I've heard that before.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, obviously, I know it's the Beach Boys, and I've heard the Beach Boys. I'm familiar with the Beach Boys, but I don't know that song.
Oh, my God. That's like, you know, teenage boy...
I mean, maybe in the 60s, it was like a teenage boy anthem.
Yeah.
If that's the word you were looking for.
Well, anthem. But... anthem would work. Yeah, anthem. I mean, especially it's girls and cars, you know?
Yeah, and it's the Beach Boys, so it's like 50, 60 years old.
God, is it that long? Let's see, 60, 40, well, it's 50 anyway, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I've dated myself. So, okay, I made a note to myself here, set the timer. We're going to talk about the shutdown first. I got to reach over here. Excuse me for a minute. I'll be right back.
I could be squeezing in some extra time while you're setting the clock.
Hear that ticking? That's the timer. When the timer goes off, we're done talking about the shutdown because it's not worth talking about, but we kind of don't have any choice, right?
I mean, it's to me, it's worth talking about on a metaphysical level, on kind of the higher level. I mean, the government shutdown itself is like, oh, great, they're shutting the government down again. I mean, the attitude that I had towards last time was great, shut that shit down, keep it shut down, don't open it back up again. And I kind of have that same attitude now. But, I mean, as you say quite repeatedly in the program notes and the agenda here today, like, this is really just a whole bunch of political theater. This is showmanship. And I look forward to the day when the American people are tired of one party or the other crying wolf and shutting the government down, when they're not really going to shut the government down, and it's not going to affect state governments that, for the most part, are actually responsible for running your day-to-day life to the extent that any government is at all anyway. And that's beyond the fact that even local police are the ones who are protecting you from, you know, criminals and mayhem and chaos. So, I mean, the idea that the federal government shutting down has any real impact on anyone ever anywhere is a little bit ridiculous. And the sooner the American people stop caring that one party or another is throwing a hissy fit, basically, and shutting down the federal government, the better. So that it'll stop working. They'll stop paying attention to it. We'll stop caring, and they can go on being responsible adults. I mean, that's not going to happen. They'll find a different pretense for being retarded.
So you've missed the point. It's never going to happen. The public is never going to be smarter than they are right now. We're doomed to have the public
that
we've got.
I don't think that's true.
Sure it is. You're supposed to be the cynical one.
Well, no. This is a cynical viewpoint, honestly. The cynical viewpoint is that there's only so many times where one party or another can say we're shutting the government down. I think it's a cynical thought to say that there's going to come a point where the Congress or one party or another is like, oh, we're going to shut the government down, and people are just like, oh, again? That's nice.
So here's my take on it. In the past, we've always said, oh, it's all politics. It's nothing to be concerned about. And I thought about it a little bit during this current episode, and it occurs to me that, yes, it's all politics, but it is something to be concerned about. We're more concerned about policy, but you don't get to make policy unless you are good at the politics. That's what it takes to get policy done. And if you have to take a time out from serious policymaking to play the politics, to win the support to do the policy, then so be it. And that's what we're looking at here. Both sides are doing the same thing. They're trying to build support from their base so that they can press their policy forward. And whoever does the best job of portraying their position as being the reasonable one, whoever wins that battle is going to have a better chance of getting their policy enacted. So on the one hand, it's certainly correct to say, oh, it's kabuki theater, it's nonsense, it's got nothing to do with reality. On the other hand, politics is the reality. You don't get to make policy unless you can do politics first, and that's what we're witnessing. So let's just summarize what, in fact, the shutdown is purportedly to be about. Senate Democrats have blocked a bill to keep the federal government running and the Children's Health Insurance Program funded for the next 6 years and to delay the Cadillac healthcare tax. All a bunch of stuff that they like. The Democrats actually like all that stuff. They have partially shut down the government. They have taken this step not because of any strong objections to the provisions in the funding bill, but because it omits a provision that they want, that is amnesty for illegal immigrants who came to our country as minors. So that's the actual policy issue that's being discussed here, even though that's not the purpose of the shutdown. The shutdown is political. That's the policy language that's actually behind it. They're continuing to do some negotiations. All they could talk about on the Sunday shows this morning was this shutdown. Literally nothing else got discussed, which is why I want to limit our time with this to a very small amount and then cover the other stuff that I thought was actually more important. I will play a quick soundbite here talking about the negotiations. The Democrats are trying to portray it as they're the ones that are being flexible. And here's a quick example of why that's maybe not necessarily true.
Senate Democratic sources tell me this. Let's put it up on the screen. Schumer raised full funding of a wall, more than $18 billion, and a full increase in defense spending, around $80 billion. But they say that White House Chief of Staff John Kelly later called back and said to Schumer that it was, quote, too liberal. Is that true?
Yeah, is there a chance can you put that list back up? Because I can respond to each of those in turn.
Well, we can remember it, but okay. go ahead.
So full funding.
Full funding.
Full funding for the wall. No, what Mr. Schumer offered the president was an authorization for funding, not an appropriation. I know that's deep down in the weeds for folks who don't live in Washington, D.C., but the difference between authorization and appropriation is like night and day. There is already authorization to build a wall on the southern border that Chuck Schumer voted for in 2006. Hasn't been built because the money was never appropriated, was never funded. And that's the same deal that Chuck Schumer offered on Saturday.
So again, it's posturing. Each side is trying to win on the politics by lying to a public that isn't really conscious of what's happening here. And I'm sure that the Republicans are telling their own lies. And my point isn't to just say that there's only one side lying. I happen to have a position on this. I know which side I want to prevail. But again, the point is the policy is not what's really at issue here. What's at issue is the politics. And I don't know how long it's going to take for them to play the politics. I guess we'll have to wait. You know, they'll do some polling. And at some point, we're going to decide who's winning the political battle and who's losing the political battle. And presumably the side that's losing will capitulate in some fashion. I thought this was funny. Ann Coulter posted something on her Twitter feed. It says, IQ test, crime, drugs, illegals flooding into the country. Do you shut down A, the border, or B, the federal government? Okay, pencils down. It's another way to manipulate public opinion. In other words, while this shutdown is going on, everybody that's got a dog in the fight is going to try to make their case why the other side is being unreasonable. This is just one sample of, you know, the Mulvaney quote and the Ann Coulter tweet kind of doing the same thing. But let me actually, we're talking about this thing being political. Let me just play you a brief excerpt of the actual debate that's going on.
While you're looking for the soundbite, and before you start it, I'm going to criticize Ann Coulter because it's what I do whenever you know, bring her up.
Okay.
When you shut down the federal government, that leaves the border wide open. Like the, and it's another reason why this...
Except it doesn't.
Exactly. I mean, it's another reason why this is all theatrical, because they're not really shutting down the federal government. They're shutting down some aspects of it that are governed by this particular appropriations bill, and they've already built mechanisms into the statutes with, you know, authorizations and appropriations and what have you, to make sure that things like border security and the TSA and the IRS and the parts of the federal government that, for the love of God, we wish would shut down, are going to continue operating. Your little statement in here about any problems getting here, roads still open, traffic lights still work, is the sun still shining, there's still oxygen to breathe, like, of course there is. This is ridiculous. This is all posturing. And again, I look forward eagerly to the day when they have pulled this card so many times. Well, we're going to shut the government down. When the general tone of the reaction from both the American public and even, you know, God willing, from some of the journalists is, yeah, that's nice. What else is happening today? Because we all know you're full of shit.
Okay, but this is my point. While this government shutdown is going on, it's an opportunity for everybody to play politics. That tweet from Ann Coulter was doing that. So anyway, let me play you this the actual shutdown debate that was going on.
Good morning and welcome to the Trump shutdown.
This will be called the Trump shutdown.
The Trump shutdown is all yours.
Day one of the Senate Democrats government shutdown.
What we're calling the Schumer shutdown.
Schumer shutdown.
My point is that the actual debate that we're witnessing taking place right now is nothing more than who is going to get blamed for it. So everybody's labeling it the Schumer shutdown or the Trump shutdown.
This reminds me of
The real debate here is not DACA. It's not the border. It's not the continuing resolution.
Who's to blame.
It's who we can hang the blame on, who's going to gain politically and who's going to lose politically. And then we're going to move on and do policy.
This reminds me of a quote from a guy I used to work for right after I got out of college. He said, most of my job is figuring out what to call things.
People have commented that the Democrats should be the ones in position to win this political battle because something like, depending on what poll you read, 80% of Americans are in favor of some sort of a DACA fix. The only thing that I would point out is, even if that's true, and I wouldn't be surprised by that, even if people support the Dreamers, the so-called Dreamers, that doesn't mean they support shutting down the government in order to solve this problem of the Dreamers, when every indication is that Trump and the rest of the Republicans are willing to make a good faith effort to solve the problem without all of the theatrics.
Yeah.
So if the Democrats end up being on the short end of the stick politically at the end of this, it's going to be because they overstepped their bounds and they were a little bit too confident.
Isn't that usually what happens, is the party that shuts the government down ends up taking the heat for it?
Well, according to all the pundits, the ones that always take the heat for it is always the Republicans. But the whole point of asking you the question, the rhetorical question, like, did you have any trouble getting here? Are the roads still open? Where, you know, are the grocery stores still open? The point is, you know, a couple weeks after the shutdown is over, nobody remembers it. The 2013 shutdown was in October, I think. It lasted for 17 days. And in 2014, the Republicans, despite having gotten the blame for it, because they were actually the ones responsible for it in 2013, despite that, they end up murdering the Democrats in the midterm election. So, yeah, the Democrats could win this politically or they could lose it. But the point is, it probably isn't going to matter because, you know, in a couple weeks, nobody's going to remember the shutdown because, like I said, do you remember where you were during the last shutdown? Do you remember how long it lasted other than the fact that I just told you it was 17 days? Do you remember when it was other than the fact that I just told you it was in 2013? Would you have known?
Do you remember that
time march when the government shut down and it was so terrible? No, nobody remembers that.
The only thing I remember about the last shutdown is that I was saying the same thing, is it's a bullshit shutdown. It's not really shut down, and I wish to hell they would shut it down.
And I'm just saying something a little bit different this time in recognizing that it's politics, not policy. And the reason we said it's ridiculous is because we thought, because we're libertarians and we're too idealistic, we thought the only thing that matters is policy, and we don't know anything about politics. That's why we're libertarians. In fact, politics does matter, and we're witnessing people practice politics. And, you know, we can diminish it as being silly, but it's reality. As long as Americans are stupid enough to buy it, politics is going to count. If we had enough Americans that were smart enough to know better, then it would be ridiculous because it wouldn't be effective.
This is how I've grown as a person since the last one. Last government shutdown, I was like, yeah, shut that bitch down. Let's do it. This time I'm like, eh, it's bullshit. Can we all just stop with the theatrics? That's how I've grown as a human being.
All right, time's up. We screwed that up royally. Okay.
The timer was not at all manipulated in the making of this program.
No timers were harmed. You had a chance to look through the agenda, and you may think differently in terms of what was the most important thing that happened this week, because shutdown was not. I thought it was the Nunes FISA abuse memo, better known as hashtag release the memo. In my opinion, it's the biggest story that's not covered on any of the Sunday shows today. It literally did not get a mention on any of the Sunday shows. And it's more important than anything else that happened during the week other than Porngate. And like I said, Porngate, we're going to cover a little bit later. I'm going to save that for later because that's kind of a dessert. You know, you don't want to, you have to eat your dinner first before you get your dessert.
If you don't eat your meat, you can't have any pudding. How can you have any pudding if you don't eat?
Okay, I thought that was appropriate to put in there. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about Porngate toward the end of the show. But right now I want to talk about that Nunes letter. My feeling about this is it's what I've been waiting for. It's like a conservative's wet dream, a Trump supporter's wet dream, that what we're going to find out is that Trump and all the Republican supporters of Trump have been telling us all along that the FBI and Obama administration were manipulating the intelligence agencies, and they used that Steele dossier inappropriately to get a FISA warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. And I believe that's true. I don't know that it's true. I'm not married to the idea that it's true, but I think it's probably true. And I would love to see the whole thing exposed. And that's supposedly what we're on the verge of. And the position is that Devin Nunes, who is the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, has written this memo, but it's got a bunch of stuff in it that's classified, so he can't release it. He got a vote among the committee to release it to other members of Congress, which to my mind means he wants to broadcast it more broadly so that it's a better chance of it getting leaked. And it purports to show, you know, some terrible things that are going on in the FBI. And this is all stuff that I believe is likely to be the case. You know, I ought to be elated about it, but the way they're doing it just makes me think, It's too manipulated. It's like they're going to overpromise and underdeliver. When we finally find out what's in this memo, it's going to be, it's not everything I hoped it would be. And then they'll say, well, that's because we had to cut out some of the classified stuff. If you'd seen the whole thing like we did, it would really be a damning piece of evidence. And I'm thinking, I'm expecting to eventually find out what's in that memo, and I'm expecting to be disappointed.
It feeds conspiracy theories.
Well, you say that, but like I said, I think that there's enough evidence to at least suggest that elements in the FBI, the upper echelon of the FBI and the Justice Department, in cahoots with Fusion GPS. Don't forget, Nellie Orr worked for Fusion GPS. She's married to Bruce Orr in the Justice Department, who was the second down from Sally Yates.
There's all kinds of stuff. Yeah. All right, again, I'm not saying that there's nothing there. I'm saying that the way that they're releasing it, I mean, as you said, it's likely to be overpromised and underdelivered. They're making it seem like there's more there than there probably really is, and the way that they're doing it basically feeds that assumption. It makes it seem like, you know, there's this big nefarious thing going on, and you know, you'd know about it too if only you could see between the lines, if you could read the blanks, if you could know the classified information. But you get just enough that there's no proof one way or the other. There's just enough of a hint that, you know, partisans on either side can interpret it the way that they want to. I mean, it's basically a political Rorschach test.
Well, I'm hoping that it'll be more than that, but I don't know. Like I said, I just have this inkling that despite how badly I want it, And, you know, it's what I've been waiting for, just waiting for the day when we're finally going to find out the truth about this. The way it's being handled just makes me think that I'm going to be disappointed.
I really like the post you put up.
Which one is that? Oh, the...
Never going to give you up.
Oh. I don't think I even put that in the program notes. It's not one of the slides, but...
Oh, it should be.
Well, it was... It was supposedly a copy of the memo finally being released, but it's
everything was redacted everything except was for redacted. The words "never gonna give you up," "never yeah. gonna let you down."
that was good. The other thing that
I have a special place in my heart for Rick Rowland.
Yeah, I know you do. The other thing that that bothers me about this whole business about the, releasing this memo is that apparently the people that. The element, I don't know, people, I say people, but it's being promoted on Twitter by all these Russian bots. There's a website called Hamilton 68, and it tracks about 600 Russia-related bots. This Hamilton 68 website, it's sponsored by the German Marshall Fund. It's a website called Alliance for Securing Democracy. There's a link in your program notes. And the reason it's called Hamilton 68 is a reference to Alexander Hamilton and Federalist Paper 68. Federalist 68 has to do with how they set up the electoral process for president to make sure that it can't be monkeyed with or tampered with. It's why we have
the Electoral College.
The Electoral College instead of a direct election of the president. So now I'll read to you from Federalist 68. Nothing was more to be desired than that every practicable obstacle should be opposed to cabal, intrigue, and corruption. These most deadly adversaries of Republican government might naturally have been expected to make their approaches from more than one quarter, but chiefly from the desire in foreign powers to gain an improper ascendant in our councils. How could they better gratify this than by raising a creature of their own to the chief magistracy of the Union? Looks like they didn't quite succeed because we ended up with Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, we've done everything we can basically to circumvent the Electoral College without abolishing it between the winner-take-all and political parties and primaries and all that other shit.
If I were to read further in Federal 60, yeah, I'll read the next paragraph here. It says, but the convention, talking about the convention that developed the Constitution, have guarded against all danger of this sort with the most provident and judicious attention. They have not made the appointment of the president to depend on any pre-existing bodies of men who might be tampered with beforehand to prostitute their votes, but they have referred it in the first instance to an immediate act of the people of America to be exerted in the choice of persons for the temporary and sole purpose of making the appointment. In other words, the whole purpose of the Electoral College is to have reasonable, smart, worldly people make the final decision. In other words, the people vote, and the Electoral College will determine whether the people did a good job or not. And unless there's a reason for them to negate that, they're going to abide by the will of the people. But like everybody was saying when Trump got elected, oh, maybe the Electoral College will change their votes. That's why the Electoral College was actually created, so that more smarter people, better informed people could say, no, this guy has spun a web and the people have been fooled by him, but we're not fooled and we're not going to elect him. It didn't work.
I had a conversation in 2012 with an attorney who worked for the Republican Party in Kent County, talking about the Electoral College and the idea of binding Electoral College delegates beforehand to vote for the winner of the national convention from each party. And the quote in here, who might be tampered with beforehand to prostitute their votes. That's literally what they expect them to do these days. They are required to prostitute their votes ahead of time.
I don't follow you. Who, the Electoral College?
The Electoral College delegates, yeah. I mean, if they don't, they're what's called a faithless elector, and there was a guy in Texas who actually did it. But in some states, it's technically against the law. And it's certainly not expected practice. It's not common practice. When an Electoral College delegate is nominated by the political party, they don't even put their names on the ballot. The name that goes on the ballot is the winner of the national convention. The Electoral College is literally there to prostitute their votes and be tampered with beforehand to vote for the winner of the convention. That's the purpose of it as far as the political parties are concerned.
The federal constitution was put together in such a manner as we just described to create this barrier between the people and the actual president being elected.
Yeah.
But each individual, the Constitution also allows for each individual state to decide how they're going to manage their, you know, voting for electors and whatnot. And that's the system that we got. So it's not as if the Constitution is at fault. It's basically the Constitution says...
Oh, no, I'm not blaming the Constitution. Yeah. I'm blaming the political parties, 100%. The Democrats and the Republicans are completely and totally to blame for the prostituting of the Electoral College. And I'm going to use the word prostituting as frequently as possible in reference to the Democrats and Republicans, because it amuses me to do that.
The whole reason we got into this whole Federal 68 thing was just to mention that one of the heaviest promoters of this whole release the memo meme has been Russian bots on Twitter and Facebook and whatnot. So that's a little unsettling. Clearly, the Russians have an interest in promoting this idea about the FBI and the Department of Justice being corrupted. I happen to think it's true, and I happen to think that I want it to be exposed, and I'm not particularly happy that the Russians want it exposed as well. They have different reasons for wanting it exposed. They want to create an environment where people don't trust their government. I want to basically purge the government
of people that can't be trusted. That can do,
yeah. So it upsets me a little bit that I have common cause with the Russians, but nevertheless, I would love to see this memo exposed, and you know, perhaps sometime in the not-too-distant future, we'll actually see what's in that memo, and then we'll make a judgment, and then we'll be back on this program and talking about it. Also, the fact that WikiLeaks has offered a reward. I've pretty much decided that WikiLeaks is an arm of the Russian intelligence service. I don't know if you've quite come to that position yourself, but I suspect that that's probably what they're doing. So again, this is all stuff that, you know, the Russians are very happy that we're questioning the integrity of our government. And I'm happy about it as well, because I think there's something to be questioned, and we can purge that corruption out of the government. What is that?
X-Files theme song, because all the conspiracy stuff.
Oh. Anyway, the Democrats are playing this down. They're saying, oh, this is just the Republicans trying to distract. They're trying to smear Mueller, perhaps with the intention of being able to justify his firing eventually. And they say all this information is incomplete and inaccurate. Well, I'd like to see it, and I'll make my own judgment. I don't need Adam Schiff to tell me whether or not Devin Nunes' memo is reasonable or not. And it's not as if I trust Devin Nunes either. He's a partisan. But let me see the goods, and I'll let you know what I think.
This is why we have trials in public.
Yeah. So the next thing I want to talk about is the possibility that there's been some collusion between the Russians and the NRA. Did you have a chance to read any of those articles?
I didn't read the articles, but I read what you had in the agenda, and that seemed pretty damning by itself, even without the details, which I assume are all gleaned from the articles.
Yeah, the first thing I have to say is there's nothing damning about it. It's all suggestive, but it warrants investigation, and I guess.
Well, what it really comes down to is it's a loophole.
Yeah, you mean that these PACs don't have to divulge who their donors are.
Well, it's not so much that that's a problem in and of itself, but the whole thing about, you know, every practicable obstacle should be opposed to cabal intrigue and corruption, and guarded against all danger of this sort, et cetera, et cetera. Like, this seems like a big enough loophole you can drive a truck through if you've basically got the ability to set up a shell corporate. I mean, I'm going to kind of explain some of the details here.
I wanted to back up and actually explain what it is that is being suggested by the whole thing.
Well, let me explain it as a hypothetical then, and we can go into it afterwards, because I think that'll be a fun way to do it. Because I mean, let's say that you're a foreign government and you're trying to influence the American election. It turns out that a pretty decent way to do it is to start a shell company in the United States to donate to a 503 organization that has, you know, it's nonprofit. It doesn't have to disclose its donors, but it is allowed to spend money on political education, so it can't say, you know, it can't use the magic words, you know, vote for, elect, whatever, but it can do issue advertising where it basically says vote for the Republicans or vote for the Democrats based on the issues that it presents and the spin that it puts on them. An organization like, let's say, the NRA, just as a random hypothetical example, which again has a pretty obvious partisan bent. I mean, there are very few occasions where they will actually support a Democrat. The Harry Reid thing being the exception that kind of proves the rule. Yeah. You know, if that's how you wanted to influence an American election, you could do that, and it would actually be perfectly legal, even if it is underhanded, amoral, and basically amounts to corruption of the American electoral process by a foreign government.
Yeah. So with that having been said, let me tell you what we know. And part of this comes from Glenn Simpson's testimony in front of the House Intel Committee. The transcript of that got released this week. This is different from his transcript from his testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee. That was last week, and that was released by Dianne Feinstein somewhat illegitimately. This, on the other hand, I think it was a consensus to release it. But the focus of this testimony was very much on Fusion GPS's investigation of Donald Trump's connections to various mobsters in Russia, people that he's done business with that had a little bit of an unsavory background. It's nothing that says, oh, he's a criminal himself. All of it's just suggestive. So it's worth mentioning that. And then it covers in particular some people trying to approach the Trump campaign who were affiliated with the NRA. If you remember back in May of 2016, the NRA had a convention in Louisville, Kentucky. There were people at that convention with some Russian, actually they were Russians, not Russian connections. I'll give you some names here. Life member of the NRA, Alexander Torshin, is a senator in the Federal Assembly of Russia. He's also the deputy governor of the Kremlin's central bank, and he also started a pro-gun group in Moscow called Right to Bear Arms. His protege is a woman named Maria Butina. She's also Russian. She's, I think, living in the United States now. She's attending, she's doing graduate courses at the American University, and she is a partner in an LLC called Bridges LLC, registered in South Dakota, with an NRA fundraiser named Paul Erickson. So the thing that makes this interesting is that the NRA spent something like $30 million this past election cycle in support of Donald Trump. And when we say in support of, it's indirect support of. They can't come out and say, vote for Donald Trump. But since they're, like you said, a 503, they can do things that support issues that Donald Trump supports. Basically, it was money that was spent to support Donald Trump. It was three times what they spent the previous election cycle on Mitt Romney. And that $30 million is actually probably an underestimate. People say it might be closer to 50 by the time you include what they spent on supporting other Republicans, and maybe even $70 million when you include things that don't necessarily need to be reported. So the point is, they're saying is the NRA spent a huge additional amount of money this election cycle than they did in the last cycle. And the speculation is, well, where could that money have come from? Could it have come from the Russians through this guy Alexander Torshin via Paul Erickson and Maria Butina and their LLC called Bridges LLC? So what William was talking about earlier was, you know, if Bridges LLC makes a donation to the 503C or whatever it is for the NRA, they don't know that it's from the Russians, or at least they can pretend they don't know. And
It's deniable.
And again, there's no proof that this happened. It's people saying, we know these certain data points, and we wonder where the money came from. It's possible that they got more donations from people within the United States, but at least raises the question, could it be possible that the Russians, in their attempt to manipulate this election, funneled money through a shell corporation to the NRA to be spent on behalf of Donald Trump? It's certainly credible, and it's certainly something that the Mueller investigation should look into. If their mandate is to find out what the Russians did to manipulate the election, or to attempt to manipulate the election, to me this seems like something that would be perfectly reasonable. And I'm not saying that it happened, and there's no proof that it did, but there's at least some reason to investigate it. I posted something on the Delaware Politics Facebook page yesterday and got immediate pushback from some people because they thought that it was more bullshit. And how can you believe this stuff? It's all more conspiracy theory. I said, read the damn article. It was an article that was published in National Review, and it basically just laid out the speculation, and it said, we got to investigate it. There was an episode back in the 90s when the Clinton campaign, the Bill Clinton campaign, was discovered to have accepted money from the Chinese via some circuitous route. And it made a big, mess about that, and he had to give the money back, I think. But the point is, if you're concerned that the Clinton administration or the Clinton campaign took money from the Chinese, if that bothers you, why wouldn't it bother you if the Russians were trying to pump money into a campaign on behalf of Donald Trump through the NRA? You should say, if that happened, we should find out about it. We should put a stop to it. If some people in the NRA knew about it, they should be punished. If they didn't know about it, well, now you know about it, and you need to take precautions so that it doesn't happen in the future.
The difference is that this time it's a Republican.
Well, of course, and that's why I got the pushback from the people in Delaware Politics, uh-huh, because it's a very conservative site. I'll be honest with you.
It's a very Republican site.
I posted that.
There's nothing conservative about it.
I posted that pushback, and the comment that I replied to got deleted. So whoever I posted that comment to thought better of what they'd said, and maybe you're right, and they deleted their remarks so that my comment...
Or a moderator did.
So, no, because it wasn't off color. So I'm pretty sure that the person who actually posted the pushback in the first place said, oh, you're right.
I look stupid.
What I actually said in the comment is, read the article instead of just the headline. You'll look smarter to the rest of the crowd. And I think maybe he did that, and he said, oh, and then he just deleted his comment, which perfectly fine by my book.
Sometimes it's better to keep your mouth shut and be thought a fool than to open it and remove all doubt.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what was playing out here. Anyway, so there's some question about what's going on between this guy Paul Erickson and this woman Maria Butina. Is she one of these, you know, Kremlin stooges that basically cozies up to somebody and then gets them to do all kinds of things that they wouldn't otherwise do? I mean, it raises all kinds of questions. I wouldn't want to be Paul Erickson because he's going to be scrutinized pretty carefully. He created this Bridges LLC. His claim in an interview was, well, we did it so that I could help Maria Butina with her school expenses if it should ever become necessary. And the McClatchy article that described that said, that's kind of an unusual purpose for an LLC, which basically means, that's bullshit. So, you know, the question is, what's going on here? It's an interesting story, and I'm sure it's something that, you know, if I know about it, Mueller knows about it, and he's going to investigate it. Well, why wouldn't he? This guy, Alexander Torshin, actually was present at the May convention of the NRA. He met with Don Jr., I think, and he tried to arrange a meeting with Donald Trump himself, and they kind of pushed him off. So there's evidence that Torshin on multiple occasions has actually tried to cozy up with Donald Trump and the campaign, and on all those occasions he's been rebuked. So to suggest that this means that there's collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians, it's actually evidence to the contrary, because all the evidence shows that the Russians were trying, but they failed on every attempt.
Well, it depends on what your purpose really is. If your purpose is to delegitimize the Trump administration, then the fact that the Russians paid Bridges and Bridges paid the NRA and NRA paid the Republicans and the Republicans got Donald Trump elected, it still works.
Yeah, except that...
If your goal is to impeach Donald Trump for something illegal he did, like, no, you don't have that.
This addresses the reason that the Trump people are pushing back so much. Trump's ego basically says, I cannot accept the possibility that I had some help in winning this elections from the Russians. He's basically saying, no, it was all me. And so he refuses to even investigate, which to me is a dereliction of his duty. The Russians clearly...
The Nile's not just a river in Egypt.
Yeah, the Russians clearly were making an attempt to influence the election.
I think they succeeded.
Well, maybe.
I think that they... And whether or not their interference is underhanded, even much less illegal, like I'm not even going that far. I mean, to the extent that, you know, we have an interest in how other countries operate, and we, you know, tell stories in the news about, you know, how we feel about this candidate or that candidate, you know, I think that's a perfectly legitimate, you know, function of any country's news media. And the Russian news media did not like Hillary Clinton and thought that Donald Trump would be easier to deal with, and they got what they wanted. And, you know, whether or not they're the only reason or whether or not Hillary Clinton herself is the larger influence, you know, I'm not even opining on that. I'm just saying, like, I think that they tried to influence the election, and the result of the election is what they wanted.
Okay, I agree with that. They got what they wanted in Donald Trump. And try, I said, Trump's ego won't allow him to recognize the fact that just because they wanted him elected doesn't mean that his accomplishment is any way diminished. And if his ego wasn't getting in the way, then he'd be more aggressive in basically investigating what the Russians did to put a stop to it for the future. And luckily, Robert Mueller is going to do that anyway, despite Trump, not because of him. I posted something on Facebook yesterday. I said, what if the Mueller investigation with their investigation of Russia and...
Between Mueller's investigation of Trump, the NRA, the Russians, and the Congress and the DOJ, IG's multiple investigations of the DOJ, the FBI, the Obama administration, the Clintons, the Clinton Foundation, the intelligence agencies, we actually end up draining the swamp.
Yeah. So in other words, we've got everybody looking at everything, and you know, Trump came in and said, I'm going to drain the swamp, and everybody said, yeah, right. Well, what if at the end of the day, because of all these multiple investigations, the swamp ends up actually being drained. If we clean up stuff at the FBI and the DOJ and to some extent the intelligence community, if we clean up what Hillary Clinton got away with in the Clinton Foundation, if that gets sorted out, and maybe even Trump himself, which certainly is not his intention when he said drain the swamp, what if at the end of the day, after all this nightmare that we've been going through for the last year or 2 years, what if we actually get rid of some of the corruption in our government? Wouldn't that be an interesting outcome? All right.
And with the out with the old, in with the new. Here's the new boss, same as the old boss.
Well, that's a cynical way to look at it. Yeah. But, again, every once in a while, if you kind of make an example of somebody that's doing wrong, maybe for a while anyway, it gets better.
Maybe.
And then maybe in a few years you have to do it all over again because that's human nature. I want to make a comment. I want to bring to the attention of our listeners a website that I found. It's called the Committee to Investigate Russia. It's a website that was started by Rob Reiner, so it's definitely a left-leaning website. The advisory board, Max Boot, military historian and foreign policy analyst. I recognize the name. He's a journalist, basically. Mm-hmm. James Clapper, former director of national intelligence. Evelyn Farkas, I don't recognize that name. General Michael Hayden. Jay Johnson, former U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security. Mike Morrell, former acting director of the CIA. I'm familiar with him. Norman Ornstein, Leon Panetta, Rob Reiner, Charles Sykes, who's a conservative commentator, Clint Watts, don't know that name. Anyway, the point is, these are people with some substance. They're not fly-by-night guys. They're all people, I think, who have expressed some anti-Trump bias, and I'm okay with that because the whole point is they're trying to say, did Russia do something with our elections that we should be looking out for? Trump doesn't seem to care, but we do. And again, Rob Reiner, he is like the most left guy you can get. So it's not as if I'm saying I would accept everything that these guys say, but based on who's on this committee, it's got the credibility to say, okay, I'm going to listen to what you say. I'm going to subject everything that you tell me through the, I'm going to consider what your bias might be before I embrace it, but I'm going to listen to everything you have to tell me because it's significant and it's a worthwhile site. One of the most significant things on here is a bunch of timelines. As you know, I have a timeline that I keep track of. I add to every day. It's about 50 pages right now, and there's a link in your program notes to that.
Telling you, you need post-it notes.
But this website has a series of timelines about the various things that have been going on in the Russian investigation. So it's a worthwhile website. I recommend it to you. Okay, having done that, moving on. I don't know if you realize this or not, but Section 702. For surveillance was reauthorized during the course of the week.
I heard something about that, yeah.
Signed by the president on a Friday. There would have been a time when we'd have made a big deal out of that. And at this point, I'm not really sure how I feel about it. I'm a little...
I mean, I feel the same way I felt before. It's just I'm, you know, not in any way convinced that Congress cares. Like, Congress is going to be all about it. The president's going to be all about it.
Well... Edward Snowden is living in Russia now and can't come home because of the things that he disclosed having to do with what 702 covers and the surveillance that it entails. And he made a big deal out of the whole thing about, you know, turnkey tyranny and stuff. So it was a big issue for us.
The key been turned.
Well, I don't know. I mean, my point of view right now is different from what it was back then. And does that just mean because Obama's not the president anymore? Mm-hmm. I think it's more than that. I think I'm recognizing that some of that surveillance is necessary to keep us safe. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that we can be confident that it's not being abused. And that's, you know, the people that are really vigorously opposed to 702 say, but it's being abused. And my bottom line is it's more complicated than I can focus on. I don't have the bandwidth to understand it. At this point, it's kind of a moot point because Congress has approved it and the president has signed it, so it's reauthorized. I just didn't feel comfortable having that have happened during this past week and we not even mentioned it on the program since we've spent so much time in the past. So if that makes me a hypocrite, then so be it. But I just thought it's appropriate to mention that. Thoughts?
Well, like I said, I'm more of the opinion that there's nothing that can be done about it than that, you know, my opinion on it has changed. I'm much more jaded rather than I've changed my viewpoint. Like, I still think that it's awful. I still think that it's prone to abuse. I still think that it probably is being abused, at least according to what Edward Snowden said. It's already being abused, not necessarily as a matter of policy, but just as a matter of their desk weenies sitting in, you know, at the terminals to these things that abuse it for their own personal reasons, you know, whether it's policy or not. And you know, the fact that it's Donald Trump now in charge of it instead of Obama, honestly, to my mind, makes it worse. Like, I think that Obama had some nefarious, you know, purposes behind the things that he wanted to do, but I think that, you know, more or less, and I'm going to alienate some people by even saying this, I think that he was more or less an honest guy. Like, I don't think that he went out of his way to, you know, cut corners or violate the law, or
we'll find out if they release the memo.
Yeah, but I mean, even that, I feel like was more Hillary Clinton and the DNC than it was Barack Obama himself. Like, I think that the worst that you can probably say about Barack Obama, and maybe I'm wrong, is that he was naive and that he was not as in control of things, even within his own administration, as he may have thought or like to present himself as.
Depending on what we see in the memo, you might be proven terribly wrong.
Maybe.
I'm not saying you're wrong.
But the bottom line is that Donald Trump doesn't even have the veneer of being an honest guy. Well, Donald Trump doesn't even pretend to be an upstanding citizen.
That's kind of what I have said to some of the people in the past about not wanting to investigate what happened with the FISA warrant and the Steele dossier, because if it happened under Obama and it's terrible, you know, now how do you feel about it that Donald Trump is the guy that controls all that mechanism? Do you really feel confident? And if you do, you're crazy.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you should be welcoming the investigation, even if it means you tarnish Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Maybe in the process, you also prevent Donald Trump from
abusing his power in the same way that they did.
Yeah.
And again, that's kind of why I definitely don't feel better about it now that it's not Obama in control. Like, I honestly feel like, again, that Obama, he would have had some sort of high-minded, you know, political goal in mind when he did it, whether it was, you know, to prevent Donald Trump from being elected, or to, you know, let the dreamers stay in the country or something like that. Donald Trump will do it just because it's fun. Donald Trump will do it to make 30 cents on extra on a pack of gum.
I don't disagree with that, but it shouldn't be tolerated in either circumstance.
I agree with that, but I mean, again, I'm responding specifically to the idea that you're less concerned about it because it's not Obama in office anymore. Like, if anything, I'm far more concerned about it now that it's Donald Trump in office instead of Barack Obama.
From that point of view, I am more concerned about it. I'm just saying that my point of view has changed in terms of recognizing that, you know, 702 is basically designed to monitor people overseas, and if they happen to be talking to Americans, you know, they have to have special treatment for how they record that and what they do about it, the fact that they're talking to Americans, and that has the potential to be abused. I get that. Well, again, we've been there already. I don't want to go through it again. I don't want to relitigate it.
I mean, that's the other aspect of it, as far as how much time we're going to spend on it. We're already spending more time on it than you've got set up here. But that's really what it comes down to, is that we've already had, you know, a fairly extensive conversation about it, you know, over on the show. You know, it was years ago, but, you know, okay, they reauthorized it. That sucks.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do about it?
I've got a brief agenda item here. DACA, political football, it'll get done. And I think it will eventually. It'll get sorted out because both sides actually want DACA to be solved. I did want to take just a little bit of time talking about what I'd like to see happen and what, you know, what they might end up doing. The whole way that this thing is being played out is what's on the table is they want to change the nature of the way we do immigration. They want to go from... you know, you can bring your family over and you can have this lottery. They want to eliminate both of those things and go to a merit-based lottery system. And I think that makes sense. That's part of the thing that the Trump side wants. They also want money for the wall, and then they want to deal with the DACA folks. I think they should deal with the DACA folks. My feeling is I don't really care about the DACA folks. The DACA folks were brought here illegally. They were children, no fault of their own. I get that, yada, yada, yada. But this is being presented as you have to do something to solve this problem. Otherwise, it's a catastrophe. And the real answer is no, you don't have to do anything. All you have to do is refrain from doing something. As long as you're not going to actively go and deport these people, you don't have to do anything. But it's terrible. They're living in limbo. They don't have, you know, they don't know if they're ever going to... I'm sorry. Too bad. You come to this country illegally, even if you did it as a child and it wasn't your fault. I don't owe you some sort of a legitimization of your status. If it's so uncomfortable for you not to know what your future is, then go back to the country that you came from, or accept the fact that you're going to get nothing from us. Now, that's not what's on the table. Everybody's talking about legitimizing them in some fashion. But I said the bottom line is we don't really have to do anything. But if we do decide to do something to be a little bit more humanitarian, to me, reasonable would be, okay, you have legal status. You don't have citizenship. You never, ever get citizenship. All that does is encourage more people to do what you did. So I think that should be a factor. I think that the requirements for changing the requirements for immigration to merit-based makes sense. And I don't particularly care about the wall. From what I understand, we can manage illegal immigration without spending $18 billion on a wall just by enforcing the rules we already have. In other words, if we had problems with people coming across the border during the Obama administration, it's because they didn't enforce what we already had. It doesn't mean because it wasn't because we didn't have a wall. So I would be perfectly happy if, as a negotiation, the conservatives, the Republicans, the Trump people say, we forego the money on the wall. We don't care about the wall, but we want these changes to immigration, and the DACA people get normalized in some fashion, but never citizenship. And what I think they're working towards is citizenship, which is going to encourage more people to come. And they're working about money for the wall to spend, you know, $18 billion wasted that we don't need in lieu of changing the actual way that we do immigration.
To be defeated by a $100 ladder unless they actually staff the wall.
Yeah, so I'm afraid that when they eventually do this negotiation, it's going to be a stupid solution. It'll be...
Because the wall's politics.
Because Trump wants his wall. He wants to say, look, I got the wall. And he'll give up the stuff that's actually good policy in order to say he got the wall. And that's what I'm afraid is going to happen. All right. A brief mention on the state of the state here in Delaware. It took place on Thursday. There's nothing more to say. I listened to it. It was about a half hour long. It was uninspiring. It was boring. The state would have been better served had John Carney simply had a press conference where journalists got to ask him questions about things. Maybe members of the opposition party got to put him on the spot. The people of the state of Delaware would have learned a lot more about the state of their state from that than they ever did from listening to a half-hour political speech, which is basically a free advertisement for the party in power.
I mean, there's so much of this political theater in the way that our government operates, whether it's the shutdown, whether it's the State of the Union or the State of the State, same difference. The fact that so much attention is paid to these... It speaks to the quality of our news media, really, that they play this game.
Yeah.
You know, they consider themselves to be quote unquote serious journalists, and yet, you know, the thought that occurs to me is the guy in The Wire in the fifth season in the season that's focused on the newspapers, the editor who's watching the press conference from the police department, and you know he's talking about it. When they're firing the police commissioner and replacing him with Bill Rawls and then Cedric Daniels, and the editor is basically sitting there talking about putting him out to pasture and making a whole bunch of snide, sarcastic, you know, off the cuff remarks to the, under his breath, and the other guy comes out and he says, "How much of this commentary can we expect in the next edition?" And the guy's like, "Well, you know, I don't have a police reporter anymore, so you know, I can't really, you know, do the kind of reporting on this that I would do, that I would want to do, or that I'd like to do otherwise." But that's really what it comes down to, is that this stuff all basically gets regurgitated without a critical eye. You know, the story in the state news about the State of the State address, the one that I read anyway, is about the Department of Corrections complaining that they only got 9 lines in the speech instead of, you know, 12 or 13, I guess they would have been satisfied with. You know, it's just, why do you care? Why does anybody care? Why is this a story at all that John Carney, the governor of Delaware, gave a speech to a whole bunch of, you know, insiders, basically, and it gets examined it doesn't get examined, basically. It gets regurgitated, it gets spit back out, and nobody bothers to think critically about hardly any of it. It's just so theatrical and so thin and so... cosmetic. That's the word I'm looking for. It's not, there's no substance there. And it really, like, again, it speaks to the quality of our news media that they're playing this stuff up as if it's news without bothering to do any of the real work.
Yeah.
Of, you know, monitoring our government.
I agree. It was a waste of time. And, wouldn't it be nice if somebody came along, I don't know, maybe a libertarian, got elected and said, you know, we're not going to do a State of the State anymore. We're going to do a news conference, and we're going to do one every month. And you can ask me whatever you want. And
there's an episode of The West Wing where they're talking about, because the federal constitution, the state constitution probably has a similar provision at this point, but the federal constitution actually requires the president to inform Congress from time to time of the State of the Union and other matters for their consideration or something. I'm butchering the language a little bit. But... Leo McGarry, makes a comment that he can buy the Congress a subscription to the Washington Post and satisfy that requirement.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that they have to go and make this big political speech and, you know, put on this big performance, that's not what's required by the federal constitution at the very least, and I'm sure it's not what's required by the state constitution either.
And originally,
so, I mean, choosing to do it this way is a conscious choice that is made by the chief executive of both the you know, federal and the state government, and to provide it all of the hyped up coverage that they do is a choice of the media.
And it was originally done by a letter. In other words, it wasn't always a speech. I think Jefferson sent a letter or something like that.
Hmm.
Or maybe Jefferson was the first to actually give a speech. I don't remember the details, but the point is there's nothing that says it has to be a speech. And like I said, if you've got the option of how to present this state of the state or state of the union, press conference would be a lot better. Well, the politicians wouldn't like it because they'd be under the gun, but the people would learn more from it.
A direct examination in a courtroom would be a better way to go about it.
All right, so you've been...
Excuse me, Judge, can you compel the witness to answer, please?
You've been patient. You've listened to all this stuff that's actual news. And
you've
now,
eaten your vegetables.
Yeah, you've eaten your vegetables. Now it's time to get to the dessert. We're going to talk about Porngate. In 2006, apparently President Trump had a year-long affair with a porn actress named Stormy Daniels. And the Wall Street Journal came out with a... I think it was about 2 weeks ago in an article mentioned that she'd received $130,000 as hush money so that she wouldn't talk about the affair. And it didn't get any press because of that. Whatever was going on last week, I think it was the shithole stuff last week. You know, why are we getting people from these shithole countries? Everybody want to talk about that. And we joked last week about how, you know, Trump is such a a controversial guy that in the week where it surfaces that he hadn't... an affair with a porn star, it didn't get enough coverage because of all the other stuff that he's been doing. But anyhow, they made up for it this week. And there's some more information that came out about it, about some of the things that had been discovered, previous interviews that she had done, and somebody discovered some emails from Stormy Daniels. Trump wanted her to spank him, and not only that, but she wanted her to spank him with a copy of Forbes magazine. And not only that, but it's the copy of Forbes magazine that had him on the cover, and not just him, but his children. So I'm going to play you a soundbite here. This is
apparently the hush money didn't work.
This is well before.
Oh, okay. This is before she
these
got
emails
paid.
Are from you know, something contemporaneous to around the time of the affair. The hush money was only paid in 2016, just prior to the election.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is Colbert commenting on this business that just came out about the magazine.
Mother Jones has now gotten their hands on emails from 2009 in which the adult film actor and director claimed her affair with Trump included an unusual act, spanking him with a copy of Forbes magazine with, wait for it, Trump on the cover. Wow. Wow. He got spanked. But I feel like I'm being punished. And if I may add one more visual to haunt your nightmares tonight, a cover of Forbes from the time does feature Trump and two of his children, Donald Jr. and Ivanka. I think I speak for Dr. Freud when I say we owe Oedipus an apology. And once again, sadly, Eric's left out of the fun stuff.
I just thought that was funny. The other thing that came to light is that some information about how the money got paid. Apparently, this $130,000 was paid to Stormy Daniels under a pseudonym through an attorney of hers through a company called Essential Consultants LLC, which happens to be registered here in Delaware. Some of you may know Delaware makes like a quarter of their revenue from corporate registrations. And this LLC was founded by Trump's attorney, Michael Cohen. And the actual address of this place...
The address isn't on here, but it's behind Green Tree Plaza, which is where we have our Libertarian Party meetings.
The registering agency is a business called National Registered Agents, and it's registered this Essential Consultants, and they happen to be located in Green Tree Plaza, like 600 feet west of where we do our meeting every third Monday. So just a little Delaware connection
at 7.
There.
Third Monday at 7. It's the Giacomo's at Green Tree Plaza.
Maybe we'll have a field trip this next month. We'll walk over to take a look at the location for National Registered Agents. Anyway, it occurred to me that And not that I would, you know, what did Bill Clinton get in trouble with the law? What did he get? What did he lose his license for? Something about lying to a grand jury because he denied the whole business with Monica Lewinsky. What would happen if Trump got in front of Mueller and Mueller asked him, so what about this Stormy Daniels thing? Did you have an affair with her? And he says no. And they can then they can track the money down through this LLC that was started and that came from Michael Cohen, and they figured out that it was Trump. He could end up, you know, going through the ringer just because he lies about this thing. And it occurs to me that can the IRS investigate Stormy Daniels? Can they say to Stormy Daniels, funny, you didn't mention anything about this $130,000 that we know you got on your tax return. And then they get her to testify. So to me, this is it's a small thing. Well, it's a small thing and it's a huge thing. The fact that the president has extramarital sex with porn stars within months of his last child being born. But I mean, that's bad enough on one level. But in terms of running the country, okay, it doesn't really mean a whole lot.
No.
But the point is, it could end up proving to be an avenue through which, you know, he falls afoul of Robert Mueller. Of course, I'm sure his attorneys will have said, you know, Clinton got in trouble over this thing. Maybe you should just make sure that if he asks you about that, you're honest with him. Or if they negotiate with Mueller before Trump goes in to talk to them, they say, these are the things he's going to talk to you about. And he's not going to talk to you about, you know, don't ask him about extramarital affairs. That's not your purview in terms of investigating Russia. But again, it's interesting from the point of view that, you know, it's one way to run afoul of the law if he happens to lie about it.
I don't see why Trump would lie about it anyway. Like, this seems like, again, Trump doesn't yeah. pretend to be some sort of upstanding, you know, quality husband or anything like that. Like, the guy's a scumbag. He basically wears that on his sleeve.
I read an article
like, yeah, I banged that shit. I grabbed her by the pussy and she smacked me with the Forbes magazine. Like, that's how we get down.
I can't remember where I read it, but somebody said that even though there was no proof that this ever happened, that it certainly sounds credible except for one thing. And the one piece of the story that didn't sound credible was the fact that Trump denied it. Because it's the kind of thing that
yeah,
Trump
exactly.
said, yeah, that was me. You bet it was me. Yeah. All right. So let's cover the calendar real quick. Nothing to report other than the fact that we'll be back again next week for another edition of Radio Free America on Blog Talk Radio. That'll be the 28th of January next Sunday. So keep an eye on your Facebook feed for that. On the culture, I got a couple things I want to talk about on the culture. Had you been following this Aziz Ansari story?
I distinctly had not been. If I had known about it, I would have deliberately not followed it.
Yeah, I can understand why you'd say that. But on the other hand, if you think about the Me Too movement and how all these serial abusers kind of met their fate, that's a good thing. It's a serious thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm talking about it in the On the Culture segment. And yet we kind of speculated, oh, but it's going to go too far. At some point, somebody's going to say, oh, you know, he asked me out on a date too many times, and I thought it was inappropriate. And, you know, some poor schlub is going to get run through the ringer for something that's really not much of a concern. Well, it ended up happening. This guy, Aziz Ansari, who's famous for having appeared on Parks and Recreation, and he's got, I can't remember the name of his other show.
Master of None.
Master of None, yeah. Funny guy. And apparently he went on a date with some woman, and she didn't enjoy it. And there may be more to it than that, but not very much. And the woman spoke to a journalist, I say journalist, but I use that word in quotes, who wrote a story about it. And basically it's portrayed as though, you know, he was the worst guy in the world, when basically all it boils down to, it was a bad date. And you can read the article yourself if you want. It's a link in the program notes. But when this story came out, and with the bashing of Aziz Ansari, a CNN journalist named Ashley Banfield kind of reacted the way I would have reacted, with basically the sense that this is terrible. Why are you, you know, turning the whole wrath of America on this guy, Aziz Ansari? He's not Harvey Weinstein. You know, they're not, you can't equate the one to the other. And, you know, you've gone too far. And so let me just play you Ashley Banfield's response to the article.
What you have done, in my opinion, is appalling. You went to the press with the story of a bad date, and you have potentially destroyed this man's career over it, right after he received an award for which he was worthy. And now here is where I am going to claim victim. You have chiseled away at a movement that I, along with all of my sisters in the workplace, have been dreaming of for decades. A movement that has finally changed an oversexed professional environment that I, too, have struggled through at times over the last 30 years in broadcasting.
So, I mean, I applaud what Ashley Banfield said, pushing her back against this story. Yeah. Just to reiterate about the story, she tells the story of a woman she calls Grace. She doesn't actually identify the woman, who claims that, you know, there's all sorts of sexual things going on between her and Aziz Ansari on this first date that they went on. Lots of things short of actual intercourse. And she says, well, I was giving him nonverbal cues that I was kind of uncomfortable. And yet, you know, she was naked in his apartment. There was oral sex mutually between the two of them. All sorts of things going on where you said, you know, if you were uncomfortable, you kind of should have said something. And
how hard is the word stop to say?
Yeah. And eventually she said, I'm going to leave. And he called her an Uber and she left. And apparently she texted him the next morning explaining how uncomfortable he was, at which point he apologized again via text, you know, sorry that it didn't work out and yada, yada, yada. So I don't know whether the guy is, you know, kind of a boorish guy or if he's just, you know, he thought this woman was interested and she wasn't. The point is she made something out of it that it clearly wasn't. And, you know, his reputation has been harmed, probably not seriously, because I think most people recognize this as a bunch of bullshit, but it doesn't stop there. After Ashley Banfield made this comment on her television program, the author of the article, Katie Way, came across on Twitter and she said this: Ashley, someone I am certain nobody under the age of 45 has heard of. I hope the 500 retweets on the single news write-up made that burgundy lipstick, bad highlights, second wave feminist has been really relevant for a little while. Which seems like a kind of a stupid thing to push back against Banfield for saying, you know, your article was poorly written.
Banfield criticizes her on the substance, and then Way comes back with a whole bunch of ad hominem.
Yeah, in fact,
mean girl bullshit.
And Banfield actually fires back. This is Ashley Banfield's response via Twitter. The reason I want to share that is because, quote, if you truly believe in the Me Too movement, if you truly believe in women's rights, if you truly believe in feminism, the last thing you should do is attack someone in an ad hominem way for her age, I'm 50, and for my highlights, I was brown-haired for a while when I was a war correspondent interviewing Yasser Arafat in Afghanistan and Iraq, Gaza, and the West Bank. Google those places. I guess this is also a further quote from Ashley Banfield. We do not attack people for their age or their highlighting or their lipstick because it is the most hypocritical thing a woman who says she supports the women's movement could ever do, and that's the caliber of the woman who was given all this power and was able to wield that power. Pretty true. You know, if you're going to complain about somebody criticizing you, criticize them on the merits. Don't say, oh, well, I don't like the color of your lipstick and your highlights.
And your age.
And clearly Ashley Banfield has got a reputation which she's proud of. And this woman that wrote the article, Katie Way, she's 22 years old.
She sounds like it.
And she should have just kept her big mouth shut. I mean, she writes for a, she writes for a website called babe.net. So she's kind of on thin ice to start with. And anyway, I thought that was interesting. Not because of the salacious nature of the whole Aziz Ansari story, but because we had said from the get-go that at some point somebody's going to go too far with this Me Too movement and some perfectly innocent guy is going to get beat up unnecessarily because of accusations that aren't really appropriate, that don't mean he's not equivalent to Harvey Weinstein. And sure enough, now we've seen evidence of it. I think we're lucky. I think it actually turned out well. In other words, somebody went too far, as we predicted they would, and somebody from the liberal media or the feminist movement actually stepped forward and said, no,
you're
not
going to... You're fucking this
up. Yeah, you're fucking this up for the rest of us. We want to be taken seriously, and if you're going to do this, it's going to hurt our credibility. So I think this is a win. This is a win for humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the same time, I can more and more understand the appeal of both celibacy and prostitution. I mean, celibacy, you don't have to worry about any of this crap to start with, period.
Oh, right.
Prostitution, you negotiate everything ahead of time.
Yeah.
And there's a clear contract that's been established.
Nobody's going to complain it was a bad date when you arranged it ahead of time and it was...
When you paid for it.
When you paid for it, yeah. The other thing I want to cover, which is also I would consider part of the...
culture.
On the culture. Thank you. I'm having a bad day today. I'm going to play you a quote from Howard Kurtz this morning on Fox News programs, Media Buzz.
I am buzzed off at Facebook right now. First, Mark Zuckerberg announces that everyone's news feed will favor posts from friends and families. He wants it to be a more meaningful experience with more engagement at the expense of stories from news organizations. Now, This not only sticks it to the media organizations that Facebook has spent years luring into partnerships that have left them pretty dependent on the social network's traffic, it shrinks the news available to you, not bothering to ask you what you want. But here's the worst part. Zuckerberg will now let the remaining news in the news feed be shaped by which are the most trusted sources, and he's putting that up for a vote. So let's say, just for the sake of argument, that two-thirds of Facebook users lean left. If their favorite outlets are MSNBC, NPR, and the New York Times, that would shift the balance, in Zuckerberg's words, for users on the right and the center, unless you specifically request other sources. This is a surrender to the crowd that could further damage Facebook's tattered reputation for fairness.
So I see actually two separate issues there, one of which I think is not a bad thing, and the other one which I do. I got that notice yesterday in my Facebook feed about we're shifting our focus more towards family and friends and less towards corporate entities and people that are, you know, paying us to put media on there. And that's I don't think that's a problem, and it's not even that big a difference, because I think I read an article, and there might be a link in the program notes where I saw this statistic. Like 5% of the stuff that you see in your newsfeed is the stuff that they're paying. They're being paid
content.
For sponsored stuff, and they're going to go from 5% to 4%. So it's So they're emphasizing more stuff from your family and friends and less stuff from the sponsored content. To me, that's a good thing, but it's like not that good a thing because it's only from 5 to 4. But you know, on balance, we could say that's positive. The other business, you know, where that potential news source is going to be coming from, that's the part that's nefarious. And just like Howard Kurtz says, if they want to determine who's going to be the trusted news source, and they're going to do it by what the people on Facebook say, well, that's certainly open to manipulation. And I don't necessarily want Facebook, or even the community, as Facebook refers to them, deciding where I'm going to see news and where I'm not. The more I thought about this, it occurs to me that we're probably not talking about news items that you post and repost on Facebook. I think we're talking about the stuff that they just kind of throw into your news.
Content.
Yeah. So I guess I'm not as concerned about it as I would have been. I would be very concerned if, for instance, if I want to link an article and show it in my news feed and they somehow censored that because it's not one of their trusted news sources, that would be outright censorship, and I would really react pretty strongly to that. I don't think that's what's going on.
At the same time, the newsfeed algorithm's proprietary, so I mean, you're never really going to know how they prioritize or don't prioritize what you post as far as who's going to see it near the top of their newsfeed or not, whether when it's not the... Because there's two different ways you can display stories on your newsfeed, if I remember correctly, unless they've changed it. You can do most recent, or you can do, you know, most popular, or whatever the hell it's called. And
the last time I looked for that, I couldn't find it, actually.
And when they... The most recent, I think, is a fairly simple algorithm of, you know, we look through all of your, you know, possible sources for content, friends, family, pages, groups, whatever, and post the most recent ones on top and start going down. But as far as the most popular, whatever the other one's called, you know, what the algorithm is for that based on who likes it, who comments on it, how many times it's been shared.
That can be subject to all kinds of mischief.
Whether it's being posted from, whether it's a repost of an MSNBC article or a Fox News article or a, you know, flatearthsociety.com article.
Right.
You know, all of that is a little bit more of a black box. And again, I'm reasonably like that algorithm's proprietary. That's something that Facebook developers know and pretty much nobody else does, and pretty much honestly no one else would understand anyway, because I mean it's all code. You know, another software developer might be able to pick through it and figure out what the hell's going on, but unless you were actually sitting in the design meeting when they said, hey, this is what we're going to do, you know, you're probably not going to really understand what's going on there. And you know, you can use the word nefarious, quote unquote. And I think that there's an element of that probably because, you know, knowing what Mark Zuckerberg's politics are, to the extent that I know what they are in the first, like, he's not somebody who I want making my news consumption decisions
absolutely.
For me.
Absolutely.
At the same time, though, you know that going in. I mean, I don't think anybody has deluded themselves into believing that Facebook is a, I mean, let me correct that. Nobody with any sense has deluded themselves into believing that Facebook is a unbiased and trustworthy source for, you know, all of the news that's fit to know, fit to print, you know, to borrow somebody else's
I'll push back
motto.
Against that. You and I use Facebook partly, I would say
I'm not going to say
partly,
I don't.
Partly for disseminating political information. Most people don't do that. Most people who use Facebook don't want to see political posts. So the only thing that they are going to see is going to be stuff that Mark Zuckerberg wants them to see. So right. These non-political people who you say everybody knows that Facebook manipulates. No, I suspect most people don't. Most people think Facebook is where you put the pictures of what you had for dinner.
Well, yeah, they do.
And they don't even realize that they're getting fed a source of news that is biased towards Zuckerberg's point of view.
Because that's kind of my point, is that they're not on Facebook to consume news, so
it's being forced upon them, whether they know it or not. And I don't think they're aware of it. Yes, if it's there and you see it, it's subtle, but I mean it's 1984 kind of subtle. I don't think it's appropriate to say Facebook. It's no big deal because everybody knows it's
Facebook
biased.
Is not the Ministry of Truth.
Oh boy, that could start a whole show in and of itself. I mean, we're only talking about what Facebook presents to you. We're not even talking about what Facebook learns about you.
Right.
You're saying it's not the Ministry of Truth. No, of course not. But, the corollary to that is it's such a benign thing you shouldn't worry about.
I'm not saying it's a benign thing.
That is crazy talk.
I'm not saying it's a benign thing. I'm saying that, again, you're a user of Facebook, and most people who are users of Facebook, I think, understand that there's an algorithm that determines what they see, and it's not necessarily, what they want to see. It's also partially what Mark Zuckerberg wants them to see.
See, I don't think that's true. I think you and I realize that we're being manipulated by an algorithm. I would say that most people don't realize that because most people aren't as political as we are. So in other words, the vast, let's pick a number and it's purely made up. 10% of the people on Facebook use it as a means of talking politics. That's primarily what I use it for, that and dog pictures. But the other 90%, it's all dog pictures and memes. And they don't even realize that they're being fed a source of news that maybe is slanted towards what Zuckerberg wants them to see. So when you say we all realize that it's being slanted, I would push back against that. We realize that. But I suspect a lot of people don't. And in that sense,
I did caveat that with the people who have any sense. And I don't really put a whole lot of stock in the people who don't have any sense, because I don't think that they do a whole lot to shape the debate anyway. So, these low information voters, they're the ones who are going to call their congressman and be like, oh my God, I heard the government was shutting down. Do I have to, stock up on bread and milk? But
I'm still uncomfortable with the direction that Facebook is taking. And if there were a conservative entrepreneur that came along and said, I'm creating a Facebook wannabe.
A number of times that has been tried.
Well, I'm not saying it could happen, but if such a thing would happen, I would shift away from Facebook in a heartbeat and travel in my own amongst my own kind. And again, I would recognize where the bias was.
There's an early adopter advantage to social media, and Facebook was really the first one.
No, I get that. Having said that, though, I actually find Twitter more valuable to me in terms of what I learn. Facebook is more valuable to me in terms of what I can convey to other people. But in terms of what I actually learn, I don't get that much from Facebook. I get an immense amount from Twitter.
I got on Facebook when they were still only available to certain universities back in 2004.
So that makes you the early adopter. All right, so we've explored all sorts of stuff today. We did a much better job covering stuff than the Sunday shows did, because, like I said, all they talked about today was the shutdown, and there was so much other stuff that went on during the course.
You thought the country shut down.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And yet here we are. All right, so...
Oh, God.
We've covered everything there was to cover. I'm going to play us out here with... a song from, I don't know, from the 30s or the 40s. It's called Stormy Weather by Etta James. Obviously, the connection there is to Stormy Daniels. And we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for listening.
There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather. Since my man and I ain't together, keeps raining all of the time. is bare. Gloom and misery everywhere. Stormy weather, stormy weather. And I just can't get my poor self together. The time, so weary all of the time. When he went away, the blues walked in and met me. Oh yeah, if he stays away, all rocking chairs. Pray the Lord will let me walk in the sun once more. Oh, I can't go on, can't go on, can't go on. Everything I have is gone. Stormy weather, stormy weather. Since my man and I, me and my daddy ain't together. Keeps raining all of the time. Oh, oh, keeps raining all of the time. Oh, yeah, 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 raining all of the time. Stormy, stormy, stormy weather.